Yesterday we talked about with the Mishnah about a mother and a daughter that the mother had helped her or assigned for her daughter. She gets 5 years of mizonos, and we talked about the different types of shtaros that you can have and whether a person can obligate themselves without a proper kinyan. So one of the ways that we talked about yesterday is one is when he says in front of Eidim that what. In front of Eidim that I am chayiv, so that will be mechayiv him to, or obligate him in terms of a full obligation. Then Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan argue about a case where he said, chayiv ani l'cho amana b'shtar, in a case where through some sort of documentation he admits to owing money. What the documentation is, we saw that Rashi and Tosfos argue about. Whether it's clear that he didn't sign the document, according to Rashi, it's in his own handwriting. According to Tosfos, it's not even in his own handwriting, but he's giving the shtar in front of Eidim, and maybe that gives it some sort of tokif, that gives it some sort of force, the fact that he's giving it in front of Eidim, because the whole point of a kinyan or an obligation is that there is a real gemira sadas, that we know that it's an official type of transaction. So now today we're going to start. We'll start at the top of Kuf Bet Amud Aleph. But we saw the last thing we saw last yesterday was the Gemara brought a question from our Gemara about obligating oneself to pay for 5 years worth of mizonos for his stepdaughter. And the Gemara says, "Oh, you see there that he was able to obligate himself. How did he obligate himself? There was never any kinyan." So that's what we saw with Gidel Merav. That's a unique case of marriage. That in cases of marriage where you have certain agreements, the Kiddushin acts as the formal kinyan or acts as the closing, closing of all agreements that happened until that point. And therefore they would obligate you because of the Kiddushin. So now the Gemara is going to continue with the case of Pidyon HaBen. So Tashma, it's the top of Kuvvet Amin Aleph, five lines down. Tashma, Katav l'Kohen Shani Chayav l'Cho Chamesh Shleim. So he writes to the Kohen that I'm Chayav to you five Selah. So why would you be Chayav to a Kohen five Shleim? Five Shleim is the cost of Pidyon HaBen. So he says I'm obligated to pay you five Shleim. Chayav l'Tein Lo Chamesh Shleim. First of all, he has to give him five Selah. Ubno Eino Padoy. And his son is not redeemed. Meaning that it seems from this, that from the Mar Bechoros, that he just obligated himself to pay five Selah, and it's not because of his Pidyon HaBen that he's paying the five Selah. So you see that he could somehow obligate himself, even though there's no formal kinyan here. So the Gemara says, Shani Hasam, Mishubad Le Mito Oraisa, because over there, he's already Meshubah to him min ha-Torah, meaning that there's a Torah obligation to pay Pidyon HaBen, and since the Torah already established that obligation, when he goes ahead and says that I'm chayav to you five selah, he's just upholding the Torah obligation, or he's just using the Torah obligation to obligate himself. Where it says, well, ihachi, if it's a Torah obligation, what's the Torah obligation? To redeem one son. So why does that Gemara and Brachot say that it does not qualify for his Pidyon HaBechor? Why did he write the document at all? Meaning that if he's obligated me to write to pay Pidyon HaBen, why is he writing to the Kohen that I'm chayiv to you five selah? He should just pay the five selah and be done. So kedei levarer lo Kohen, because he wanted to choose which Kohen was going to be the Kohen that gets the Pidyon HaBen from. So the document was showing or pointing to which Kohen. So then why isn't his son redeemed? Then if we're saying he's acting on the Torah obligation to redeem one son, and he's just using the document to show which Kohen he's picking, then when he pays the Kohen, why isn't his son redeemed? This is a special case. It's not because he obligated himself through a document, and therefore now he's obligated to pay the five selah independent of Pidyon HaBen. But it's like Ula Damar Ula Dvar Torah Podui Lekishiyite, that Omina Torah, once he gives the money, it works as Pidyon HaBen, the son. When we my time Amru Bano and a Podui, then why does the Gemara in Brachot say that he's not redeemed? Gezerah Shem Yomru Podim Bishtaros. Because the Gemara does not want, or it's a gezerah of a chachamim, that people shouldn't come to think that through a shtar you can pay for pidyon aved. Okay, what does it mean to pay through a shtar? Either you give him a shtar that says, you know, I owe you 5 shekel, or this is 5 shekel, or Rashi says that he writes over to him other chovos that he has. Someone else owes him money, he writes that, you know, it's like signing a check over to somebody, signs the check over to the kohen, that does not solve his problem.
It's a little bit like you can't redeem hekdesh with shtaros.
Right, very, very similar idea. So the Gemara is trying to uphold that, because even though now, what happened? Over here, he wrote a shtar to the kohen that says, basically, I'm obligated to you 5 sela, and then he goes in and he pays it. So the shtar was not the thing that created the pidyon. It's when he actually paid for it that it works. So I want to know why, when he pays for it, does it not work? He's paid cash. So when I said, because he used the shtar beforehand, it looks like the pidyon happened through a shtar. And therefore, they don't want other people to think that he used the shtar for the pidyon aben. And therefore, they say even when he gives the money afterwards, it doesn't work. Because some people won't know about the shtar, they won't know about the money. They'll think that a shtar can be called this.
See, they have to get the money back and he paid for the shtar.
Right, so he gets
a free pass. Really was not, no. Obviously, it means that he has to pay 5 shekels again.
Right.
To do the pidyon.
Right.
If his intention was really only to. But basically, we're saying that the Chachamim avoided such a pidyon event.
Right.
Like that if you included your star, then the whole pidyon event doesn't really work.
Right.
So you have to pay 7 shekels. So can he get back the 5 shekels that he gets?
That's a good question. Honestly, it's heftier based than heftier. So when we say hefker based on hefker in these types of cases, do we say that invalidate the whole transaction, or do we say no, the money's now hefker and going to keeping the money? Right, it's a good question. All right. So anyway, the Gemara tries to bring a proof to our case here. Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish Machlokas, which is that when I have a document that's written without any edim and without any kinyan, is that enough to obligate oneself? So here we had a case by Bechoros where it seems to be that it looked like he wrote this document, now he's obligated to pay the 5 shekel, and it doesn't work as pidyon aven. So it sounds like it was a separate obligation that he created for himself by writing it. Mars says, no, this is all about pidyon aven. So why is he writing it that? Why does it work? Because the Torah obligated him. That's why it works here. Well, if the Torah obligated him, why is he writing a document? And why isn't his son Nifta? So that Gemara answers up two things. One is he writes the document because he wants to choose his kohen. He wants to say, this is the kohen I'm going to use. And number two is, a technicality in Bechoros, which is, we don't want you redeeming your son through shtaros. It doesn't work. So that Gemara now leaves as not being a solution to our problem. Amar Rava Kitznai. Maybe possibly this is a machlokes tanoi. What would that be? Arev, hayotze achar chitum shtaros, gove menechasim b'nei chorim. So an Arev is a guarantor. You have a guarantor who signed on to a document, but his signature is after the signatures of the Eidim. So really, the guarantor is not on the in the regular document. It almost looks like it was added on later. So it says, Arev hayotze achar chitum shtaros, gove menechasim b'nei chorim. So even though it doesn't give it the force of a documented guarantor, so then you can only go after his free and clear property, but at least you can do that. But you can't go after his mishabah. Ma'aseh ba'al lifnei Rabbi Shmuel, ba'amar gobeh minechasim b'nei chorim. So then there was a ma'aseh before Rabbi Shmuel who said, exactly like we just saw in this, the statement about the Arev, which must be, you know, Rabbi Shmuel's position, that you're allowed to go get free and clear property from the Arev. Amar gobeh nanas, ina gobeh lo minechasim b'nei chorim, lo minechasim mishubodim. You can't get from either property. I mean, the fact that the Arev is after the whole document's complete means that he wasn't part of the whole transaction. It means he was added on later. Amar lo lomo. He says, why? Rabbi Shmuel says to Ben Anas, why can't we go after the Arev? Amar lo harishai yochonek et chaveru b'shuk. Somebody was throttling his friend in the marketplace. Matza chaveru. And his good friend here came along and found him. Right? He goes, leave him alone, I'll pay you 100, I'll pay 1,000 shekel if you just let him go. So some guy was attacking him, he says, I'll pay you money if you let him go. Potter. Right? So, because he says, he'll vote. Because that wasn't the reason that he lent him. Meaning that in our case, leaving the case of the shuk alone, but in the case of the shuk also, guy wasn't really going to pay 1,000 shekels to get his friend out. He was just trying to get the guy to leave him alone. So he really didn't intend to obligate himself. He didn't intend to pay the money. So too on the document that we have here, when the arev, the guarantor, signs at the bottom, he signed it after the document was totally complete. That means that the malveh, when he lent the money, he didn't know about the guarantor. He was lending the money without any guarantor. He obligated, he said, it's fine, you take the debtor, and he let the whole document go without a guarantor. The guarantor was added on much later. So he says there's no way that he can obligate himself afterwards. The arev, what is the vehicle by which the arev obligates itself? It wasn't at the time of the loan. The malveh, the creditor, is not dependent on him. So why is the arev involved at all? That's Ben Nasi's position. Rabbi Shmuel says, okay, since it's not in the side of the document, you can't get it from Mishubadim, but at least get his free and clear property from the arev. So Gemara's going to say, that's what? Leima. Rabbi Yochanan, Damar, Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Yochanan, who thinks that what you can obligate yourself through a documented, when you document an obligation without Edim and without a formal kinyan, you can still obligate yourself. So it's over here, the arev can obligate himself even though he's after the completion of the shtak. Even if it won't allow him to get to Mishubadim, but at least he'll get him to free and clear property. But he's actually marked to Ben Nanas, and Reish Lakish holds like Ben Nanas. And the guarantor is at the end of the, after the document, it's as if he's saying afterwards, I'm obligating myself. So what? Right? Reish Lakish believes when you do that, there's no validity to the document at that point. So Gemara says, no, that's not the same method. So leave it to Ben Nanas, Kuliyama Lo Pligi. According to Ben Nanas, everybody agrees that there's no argument, according to Ben Nanas. So if you look in Rashi, what does it mean to Ben Nanas, Kuliyama Lo Pligi? It's less Rashi. Klomar, Baha, Shafir Kamar, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Shmuel. Here, for sure, Rabbi Yochanan has to hold like Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Yochanan cannot hold like Ben Nanas. Ben Nanas says nothing is valid. Here, Rabbi Yochanan can't hold like that. Look at Ben Nanas. He can't hold like Ben Nanas. The Moser Rabbi Yochanan, the Ben Nanas Potter. According to Ben Nanas, in the case where we have a document that's obligating the individual, it won't work at all. So now, here, Rabbi Yochanan, Ben Nanas Potter, the Hashto. Listen to this. Rashi, it's an interesting line here. Uma Arev, the Shibud de Oraisu. An Arev who can obligate himself, the Shibud, the uncovering of the Arev, is a Torah. It's a Torah obligation. Why? Diftiv, where do we get it from? Anochi Erevenu, where's that from? Anochi Erevenu, Mivadi Tevakshenu.
Yehuda.
Right? So he said that is the, I don't know what it means, Torah obligation. What does that mean? So when, even when Ben Nanas, who says when you have a Torah and covering of a guarantor, right? Yeah, it doesn't work. So certainly in our case, where it's just a document, it's not going to work. So Rabbi Yochanan and Rishon LeZion agree that Ben Nanas says it doesn't work. The machlokus will be in Rabbi Shmuel. Just think it's an interesting Rashi, because when we say something's deoraisa, generally we say that the Torah. Now we have this by Shavuos. Also, the Gemara Shavuos says that Shavuos deoraisa, because we see that Abraham or Nikita Chavit. It's from the Torah because we see by Abraham that he tells Rabbi Yisrael, "Sibiyat chatachet yirechi." So what does that mean? Does that mean that the Torah says you have to do it this way? No. The Torah just has a model or a paradigm that we see that the Torah has. And that's what they call Doraisa. So it's over here. It's not that being an Arev is a Torah requirement. It's that you see that the Torah has some sort of framework or prescription by which it does work.
It explains over here that the point over there is that it's strictly verbal.
Right, there's no kitchen, yeah.
It's just that, you know, so by Arev is, you can obligate yourself by Arev is verbally, which is what we see from that puzzle.
Right.
Because there's no shtar, right? Moshe came by alone, where a simple statement that I owe you X doesn't obligate you.
Right, but it's clear there that I guess the question on my list, right, that's what the Gemara is after, what Rashi is saying, but there it's not a formal kinyan. They're not trying to create a kinyan transaction. It's a, you know, it's about his brother Binyamin. It's about, you know, making a guarantee to his father. You're not making a financial transaction here. So it's just, it's interesting that the Torah uses that, the Gemara says Doraisa is a paradigm, because the Torah allows such, or talks about such transactions that becomes a paradigm. It's in Brachus, of all places, which in general we don't learn a lot of from Brachus too. So it's, I think it's just interesting to know. All right.
So again, I don't believe that the Ben Manas Kulam Lo Pli means what?
That Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish will agree that it does not work at all. Like the Shtar, if you wrote a Shtar to obligate yourself, everybody agrees according to Ben Manas, it does not work. That's the way Rashi learns it. So Fig Tosus here discusses exactly what does that mean. That Rabbi Yochanan cannot hold like Ben Manas, and when does Rabbi Shimon argue on him, and when does an array work? What type of...
No, Rabbi Yochanan would be moved into Rish Lakish, that according to Ben Manas, Rish Lakish would be correct.
Right, exactly. So there's a real time and talks about here. Tosfos spends a lot of time here. We've learned the sugya according to, or actually we mentioned yesterday, Tosfos Rabbeinu Tam is a different way of learning the whole sugya about what's involved here and whether there's an admission by the individual. Is there a verbal admission by the individual that they're obligated, whether he signs in the document? Like Rabbeinu Tam, we said that there's some problem in the document that he didn't sign on it, he didn't admit to it, he just handed the document over. Rabbeinu Tam says that it's a case where there's a full signed document, everything is good, and yet there's still a problem here because you cannot be meshabed yourself with such a shtar because there was no kinyan. The whole failure of Maisa Kinyan, so even with all the other things being good, there's still a failure of Maisa Kinyan. So that's why I won't spend time on it. I'm just pointing out this big tosis here that to learn this whole sugya again. Because the difficulty of the sugya is trying to understand what Rish Lakish of Yochanan, what the problem was. We saw that in Rashi and Tosis yesterday, meaning that he signs a paper that says I'm obligated. So why is that not enough?
Where's
whether he signs it or not. All right, that's very good. Right, that's the point. Rashi says it's his handwriting. Tosfos says it's nothing in his own handwriting. Whether he's doing it in front of the Eidim, he gives it some sort of tokif. And so the Rishonim you see are trying to figure out what did he do that failed, and what did he do that was enough to make it into a Gemara Sadas. Right, we're after there's a failure of Maisa Kinyan. There's no actual Kinyan. But we want to know if certain actions give it Gemara Sadas, give it the same force as having Eidim there. And that's what the argument here is. So Rabbeinu Tam goes to the furthest extent to saying that everything is good here. You're just missing the Kenyan. And that's still not enough. Alright? Alright, so now, next, we'll turn the Amud Pipligate, where they argue, Aliba to Rabbi Yishmael, that Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish's Machlokas will be according to Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yochanan ki Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yochanan can easily hold like Rabbi Yishmael. They both hold that you can obligate to oneself in a written document, even though there's no kinyan here. The arev was afterwards. So too, if you wrote a paper or someone wrote a paper that says I'm obligated to get in front of Edim, that would be enough. But Rish Lakish says I can look on Rabbi Yishmael hatam el deshayach leli shibuda deoraisa. Right, so this is the line. This is where Rashi got it. Over there, when there's some sort of connection to a shibuda deoraisa and arev, where there's a shibuda deoraisa, then it functions. Avahachal shayach shibuda deoraisa. Over here, by a case where someone just hands a document, says I'm obligated, there's no Torah paradigm, there's no Torah framework in which he's working. That's just a transaction. And in such a transaction, you can't obligate yourself without at least some sort of push mina Torah. We saw this twice. Shibud deoraisa helps by b'chor, and it helps by, over here, by ored. Since the Torah already has something, then you're just turning on the Torah obligation. The turning on the Torah obligation you could do without the formality of a kinyan. But to actually create a transaction or create an obligation without any help from the Torah, that you can't do, according to Rish Lakish.
Now, to say that Rabbi Yochanan, you know, works perfectly, you know, according to Rabbi Yishmael himself says, it's not like a regular Erev's guarantee, because you can only claim from, you know, properties that's been occurring. You can't claim from Shabbat. Rabbi Yochanan did not apparently qualify his statement that the chov is considered a good chov, right? You know, he seems to accept the tokef completely.
Right. I think Rabbi Yochanan, and I'm just going back quickly now, but I think Rabbi Yochanan says it's the equivalent of milveh alpeh. It's equivalent of giving a loan orally. It does not become like a shtar. Because of the, I mean, it's questionable whether it becomes like a shtar. Because whether the Eidim give it kala. I mean, that the whole reason that a shtar is different than a milveh alpeh, why can you go after encumbered property when you have a shtar? It's because a shtar has kol, right? It spreads. And therefore people will be forewarned not to buy the property because somebody else, there's an obligation outstanding here. There's a lien on the property. So they can't go to the title, but they couldn't do title searches back then. The equivalent of title search was if everybody publicly knew about a sale, people would make them aware of the fact that there was debts outstanding on this property. So in this case, maybe, I think for Gilbert.
You say maybe there's no shibud, there's a building.
Right, there's no dated document, there's no konet, this is only, it's equivalent of a milga al-peh. I don't know why I'm thinking, I thought I saw that, but I can't, I don't see it right away now, but I think that it may not be, have a full tokif of a, because, I mean, Tosus at the end says that by the mizonos that she can give, because our Mishnah, the Gemara brought a proof from our Mishnah by the girl, that the stepdaughter, that he obligates for 5 years, how come she can go after Mishabdin? How could she go after encumbered property? There's no signed document going to this. So, right, the Tosus says the last, in the Amma, the Kufa Alakam and Bet, the last line, Vavagav Dalavi Shtar Gomor, Gavi Mishabdin Isle Kala, because it has a cult. So that, I mean, that would be the difference over here, the question of kol. What do you have? I mean, if they already just signed at the end of a document, there's no kol there for the buyers to be aware of. So you could either say that Rabbi Yochanan only holds the equivalent of a milveh alpeh, or you could say that Rabbi Yochanan holds that it is, you can get from encumbered property, but over there you have eidim. By having eidim, that gives it kol. That gives it the effect of kol. Over here, he's just signing at the end of the document. Nobody else is there.
I would say he's not covered by the
Hezer,
he's not
covered. That's right, maybe there's no call to it. You have to either differentiate, although I think it's possible that you could say that it's not. It's only like a milk up head. All right, Gufa. Amar Gidol Marav. This is what we learned yesterday, that if one has transactions that happen prior to the wedding, and then the wedding consummates them, that obligates them, even though there was no formal kinyan in the obligation. Amar Gidol, Kama Atanotein Levitcha, Kach V'Kach, Kama Atanotein Levitcha, Kach V'Kach. When they have kiddushin, when they make the kinyan kiddushin, or they have the kiddushin, there's a kinyan over here. These are these unusual items where you can simply obligate yourself orally, and you don't need a formal kinyan to obligate yourself because the kiddushin closes that whole parsha. Rav's statement makes sense when he's marrying off his daughter, who is a na'ara, the kamati hanali yode. Because how is he obligating himself? This is the idea of consideration. How is the father obligating himself? Because he's marrying off the daughter. Who gets the kesef kiddushin? The father. So since the father gets the kesef kiddushin, he's getting some hanah. Through that hanah, he's going to obligate himself in the tanoim that he agreed to. If you have a girl who's already a bogeret, who gets the kesef kiddushin? Who gets the kesef kiddushin? The daughter herself, not the father. So he's getting no hadah. Lo, then it shouldn't work in that case. That's what Rava suggested. Velukim, what do you mean? Right? Amar Rava filu bogeret. Rav said a statement even by a bogeret. Dilo tema hachi. If you don't say so, then it makes no sense. Why? You only explain one half of the transaction. There are two parties in this transaction. Who's that? There's the Kala's family, and there is the Chatan's family. So when it comes to the Chatan, what do we say? Oh, because he got the Kesef Kedushin. The Kala's family, since they got the Kesef Kedushin, they are going to obligate themselves. What about the Chatan's family? How do they obligate themselves? They're not getting any hanah here. Here's a ma'achi. Avi Abayn, my hanah ataliyadeh. The father of the groom, what benefit is he getting that he's obligating himself? With the hano of the kiddushin, since there's a mutual agreement and a mutual benefit in the kiddushin here, everybody wants the kiddushin to go through the hano of the shidduch being complete, or the kiddushining happening, that obligates both parties. So now, what's the problem? What's the question here, or what's the issue?
Then she should also work by her parents. If that's the reason, then she should also work by her parents.
Right, so that's what the Gemara is answering. Right? The Gemara says you can't say Rava's qualification of that statement is right.
So therefore, it works in all cases on both sides.
Right. Okay. But even by Bulgaris, even by Naro, or either side, it's not working like a formal kinyan. It's not working that the Hanal is driving the kinyan over here.
Nobody says it doesn't work by Bulgaris.
Huh?
Nobody said that it doesn't.
Rava tried to say that.
No, he suggested it, and then he himself said.
Not he. The Gemara said, "Look, my Rava feels Bulgaris." I don't know if it's somebody, the Gemara himself, or somebody's answering back to Rava. that it can't be.
According to the Rabbi Sproul.
Rabbi himself realizing.
You know, so that's his whole point of the statement. Is he's setting it up. He's saying that it can't be that because Rabbi himself said.
But it's even by Abba Gerther. So he's learning with himself, and he came to that conclusion. All right. So now Amalei, Ravina the Ravashi, Dvarim Halalu, Ninu Li Katev, Alo Ninu Li Katev. So now, once you've obligated yourself through this kiddushin, can you write them down? Can they be documented or not documented? That's the question is, what type of kinyan have you made here? If the kinyan, which is not functioning like a normal kinyan, is it enough of a kinyan where you can now document the obligations? Or is it a kinyan which has to remain in the frame, the world of oral obligations, of being just simply stated obligations? So Amalei lo nitnu likatev, cannot be written down. Because why? What would be the difference if it's written or not written? What does a written document do for you versus oral? That's what we just said. What's the difference? The ability to get from Shabdesh, the ability to get from encumbered property. If you're allowed to write it down, then you can go after encumbered property. If you don't, so we say you can't write it down. Why? Because there was no formal kinyan here that does not allow you to go after encumbered property. Then we're not going to let you write it because that will allow you to get it out, go after encumbered property. So he says, Loni Nula Kukatev, it has to remain in the world of Milvel Pet. So now the Gemara is going to bring a series of questions here, saying, you know, we see that there are other places where you can write down what are otherwise oral tracts. Hapikhin Naku Kotvin. The smart people, this is the last line in our Mishnah, right? The smart stepfathers used to write in their documents, Amanashe Zonet Bitka Kameshanim, that I will feed your daughter for 5 years, Koshma Nisha Atimi, as long as you are with me. But what does it say in the Mishnah? Kotvin. They write it down. Now, when he obligates himself to feed the stepdaughter, how is he doing it? It's one of the Tanayim of the. He didn't write it, he didn't make it any Kenyan on that. He wrote it down. He obligated himself through the marriage that he will give this to this woman. If that's the case, right? How come he can document it? Because this is exactly our case of Rav Gidol Merav, where there's dvarim that are nicknamed by Yedei Amiro through an oral obligation, and he's writing it down. The Mishnah says the word kotvin. Where it says my kotvin omrim. But the Mishnah says kotvin doesn't merely mean writing down. It means he says. It says v'karile amiro, v'karile amiro ktiva. Do we really use the word ksiva instead of amira? Where it says in, right? We do. Adnan, we have a Mishnah, kote blishto din and barim in libin echsaif. Right? We had this Mishnah earlier that he writes, he gives a release to his wife that I have no claims against your property. I have nothing to do with your property. Then we say, betani rabchia ha omer liishto. And rabchia says that our Mishnah is referring to what he says to his wife. He gives her a oral release. Yet the Mishnah used the term HaKotev, even though it meant an oral release. So you see that the Mishnah in other places does what? Allows one to, or uses the word Ksiva even when it means Amira. So too over here in our Mishnah, when it says Kotvin, it doesn't literally mean they wrote it down. It means that they gave, he orally obligated himself to feed the stepdaughter. Tashma, how about this? Ein Kotvim Shtere Yusin Minisun El Midash Shnehem. You can't write a marriage document, whether it's a shtar rusim or a nisuin, except with both of their permission, or with the knowledge of both of them. Let's say that, with the knowledge of both of them. Hamidash nehem kotvim. But you see that if they both are aware of it, you can write it. My love, what is a shtar rusim and a shtar nisuin? My love, shtar psikta. These are the tenayim that we talked about above, these types of oral obligations. So you see what? Then you can write them down. Someone says, lo, shtari rusin mamash. No, they're real. It's a shtari rusin, literally a shtari rusin. Kedra papa v'rav shvarvia. That, like the statement of Rav Shvarvia, the Idmar. Kafu lishma v'shalomi da'ato. If they wrote a shtari rusin and for her name, it was intended for her, but she's not aware of it, rabo v'ravina rimi kudeshin. Still works to function as kedushin. It does not work, the Kedushin do not work without her knowledge, without her knowledge of this document. The fact that it's documented has to be with her knowledge. So you see that it's not. Gemara tried to bring another proof that you can document oral agreements, because you have the shtari rishin, which we say you could write down. And the Gemara says, no, that's not a sikta, that's not the shtar tanoim, this is a regular shtar erusin. Has to do with different machlokas, not related to our Gemara at all. Machlokas, whether when you have two parties that are getting married through a shtar, did you not only need the shtar, but you written the shema for a name, but you also need it to be written bida'ato, or with her knowledge, with her foreknowledge. Alright, next. Tashma. Meitu. Benotem nizonit minichasim b'nei chorim. V'hi nizonit minichasim mishubadim. If they pass away, the father passes away, all the other daughters can only get their mizonos from through tnai suba. That gets only from free and clear property. This girl, this one stepdaughter, gets to collect from encumbered property. Why? Because she functions like a creditor. How did she become a creditor? How did she become a creditor to take out nechos mishubadim? Unless you documented the transaction. How did you document this transaction? It sounds like you could document an oral transaction. We just said before, this was an oral transaction, and it was obligated through the Maisa Kedushin. The Gemara says, oh, what does it mean, kotev? Kotev means that he said it. Right, but if it remains as an oral transaction, there's no way that she could go after encumbered property. So here we're saying from our Mishnah, it must be what? Must be that it was documented. If it's documented, then we see that there are oral agreements that can be documented. There was a separate kinyan that related to this obligation of feeding the stepdaughter. If there's a separate kinyan, benot nami. So what about the other daughters? If there's a kinyan on obligating to feed daughters, why do the other daughters only end up with free and clear property, and this one stepdaughter gets to go out of and look for encumbered property? Shekana lezu, velo kana lezu. He made a kinyan with regards to the stepdaughter, and he did make a kinyan with regards to the daughter. Smart says, my pasco? What does it mean, my pasco? Where do you come up with such a crazy case? The Mishnah comes up with this crazy case that you have a number of daughters and a stepdaughter. One of them has a kinyan, one doesn't have a kinyan. You don't even see this in the Mishnah. This is like a convoluted case. The Mishnah should have mentioned something about it. So it says, no, this is simple. It's not that this is an unusual case. Why? Ihi dahavai b'shas kinyan mahani. Well, who was around when they got married? Who was around? Prison. The stepdaughter. The other daughters aren't born yet. So when he makes the kinyan's only good for whoever's there. Who's there? The stepdaughter. Hey, mahani lo kinyan. B'nos lo habi b'shas kinyan lo mahani lo. The other daughters aren't born yet, so the kinyan is going to have no effect for them. Where it says, Milo has kinyan, the Havimish has kinyan. So maybe the case in our mission is when the daughters were there at the time of the kinyan. Oh, how do you have that? They're getting married. How does he have his daughters at the Shas kinyan? The Hei Dami Kegon the Garsh of Ahadra. He divorced his wife, and he remarries the wife. So when he remarries her, she's bringing not only the stepdaughter, but his own daughter is back in this marriage, and he can make a kinyan at that time. So why should the kinyan be effective both for the stepdaughter and for the daughters? Ella, ihi deleta v'tanai beis din. She who's excluded from the tanai beis din. The stepdaughter is not included in the tanai ksuba. Mahani lo kinyan. The kinyan has effect for her. But no, stinu v'tanai beis din lo mahani lo kinyan. So the other daughters who are included in the Tanai Beis Din, they're covered by the Tanai Beis Din, that the kinyan won't help. Smart says, Mikra Gari? Why should the Tanai Beis Din hurt them? And the whole point of the Tanai Beis Din is to help them. We had this earlier in the Gemara, that if it doesn't help you, you can reject the Tanai Beis Din. Right? It's only the whole point of the Tanai Beis Din is for your benefit. It's here, it's putting them in a worse position. So they should say, what? We don't want the Tanai Beis Din, we want the full kinyan here. Now, since these daughters are in the Tanai Beis Din, they're included in his ksuba, our assumption is that they have money, that the father gave them money to cover his Tanai Beis Din, that since he knew that they can't go after encumbered property, before his death, he gives them all a package of money, meaning that he gifts his daughters the money to take care of this Tanai Beis Din.
As far as it's saying, they could go for Bnei Chor, they should be able to go for anything.
No, they won't, only the Shua, Loti Fra'la Mishua, right? They'll have to give a Shua that they didn't get money already.
It's not enough of a Shua, they need to have a Shua.
Right, it's not, we suspect, we're not saying that he did it, we suspect that he did that, and because he did that, we're not going to let him go after encumbered property. Okay, so quickly, just a quick chazara on the Gemara that we just did now. The Gemara switched. The Gemara had the first issue which we dealt with, which is the Mahalkas Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan, about whether one can obligate themselves outside of a formal kinyan. Can you obligate yourself? We said the first thing we said is in front of Eidim. If he does it with a full oral, then that might obligate, everybody will agree that obligates himself. The question was when he does it through a written document. How that written document works, we saw a number of Mahalkas. Right, we saw Rashi who says it was written in his handwriting, not signed. Right, Tosu says it's not even his own handwriting, but the fact that he gave it in front of Eidim, is that enough of a Gemir Sadas, even without a Kenyan? We saw Rabbeinu Tam who suggested that maybe even it's a full force document, but the lack of Kenyan makes it that maybe there's no Gemir Sadas here. All of these, so that's my focus for Shalakas Rishab, it says it has no bearing, it has no effect. Giving such a document, because you're missing Kenyan, you're missing the mice of Kenyan. The Yochanan says it does have an effect. So once you have these types of oral agreements, it does have an effect. We tried to bring proofs from different places. One was Tanoim. There the Gemara says that's different by Tanoim because Tanoim are concluded through the Kedushin. They're concluded through the Kedushin. Therefore, even though they're oral agreements, they have a Maisa Kinyan, or they have something that closes them through the Kedushin. Then we tried to bring a proof from Pidgin Aben. Over there we said the Pidgin Aben has a different framework because it's working with the Shiva Doraisa. It's already working with the Torah obligation. So when he obligates himself, even though it wouldn't work in other places, since the Torah already obligated him, he's turning on the Torah obligation. It's not like he did anything. Doesn't need to make an extra kinyan. We had some technicalities there. Why, when that happens, does it not work? Then the pigeon event, we said that's a technicality of we don't want him to affect a pigeon event through a shtar. Therefore, when he pays later, we say it doesn't work. At the last case that we were trying to prove it was Aref, a guarantor. So the guarantor, we said over there, was Machlokes between Rabbi Shmuel and Ben Nanas, where a guarantor was signed after the completed document, whether he can obligate himself. Rabbi Shmuel says yes, Ben Nanas says no. So according to Ben Nanas, we said that Machlokes Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Shmuel doesn't exist, because he says clearly no. Rabbi Shmuel, that was where Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shmuel would argue. We said Rabbi Yochanan would agree with Rabbi Shmuel. He would say the same thing. And Rabbi Shmuel would say no. Rabbi Shmuel only applies when there's a Shiva Doraisa. But again, like before, where he's turning on a Torah obligation of Orif, of guarantor. But Rabbi Yochanan says no. Even by broader cases of oral agreement, then it would work. That's the end of Rish Lakish Rabbi Yochanan. And then we stepped into the next question of the Gemara. That was the second half of that, which is when you have these oral obligations, when they do work, either according to Rabbi Yochanan where it works, or in the case of Kiddushin, where you have the Tanoim that work through an oral obligation, can you document them afterwards? What will the effect of documenting them having them? That you can go after Shibud, the encumbered property. So Gemara tries to bring proofs from our Mishnah about whether you can document them. Because in our case, we have a stepdaughter where he's obligated himself towards a stepdaughter, and yet, it says Kotvin. He writes it down. So the answer the first time from the Gemara is that Kotvin means Amira. He just said it. He didn't really write it down. Later on, the Gemara comes back to this again and says what? The Mishnah says she can go after Mishubotim. She can go after encumbered property. She can go after encumbered property. Then it's clear that he had to be able to document them because if he was document. If he didn't have a document, he couldn't go after encumbered property. So the Gemara says, oh, no, it's a case here. It's an unusual case. He had a kinyan. There was a formal kinyan here, and that's why he's obligating himself. Gemara says it's a formal kinyan. Why are these orders different? Right? Why are this daughter different than the other daughter? Gemara says, well, it's because one daughter's around at the time of the Kedushin, the other one's not. Gemara says, well, I can come up the case where all the daughters are around. And then, by case where there's a Grusha and he's returning his Grusha, remarrying her again. So he's taking her to that. So the Gemara says, oh, so what's the difference between them? Tanai Beis Din. Since the other daughters have a Tanai Beis Din, we suspect that he gave them, or we assume that he gave them money to pay it off, and therefore we're not going to let them go after encumbered property because of the Tanai Beis Din. Whereas this stepdaughter, he knows she's a Balas Chov. She knows she has a full force document, and therefore he's not going to give the money because she can go afterwards to go after the Mishubadim and go after the encumbered property. That's the conclusion of the Gemara. The Gemara has no conclusion, I'm sorry about writing down, or it seems from the Gemara's conclusion that you cannot write down these oral agreements because it would make them stronger than they really are.
In a case like his daughters, couldn't they be asked to take a shuwa that they didn't receive the.
Right, but it'll only give them the ability to go after free and clear property then, because the assumption of the buyers is that the father will take care of them. So they're saying, you know what, we're not going to worry about this obligation because the father's going to give them money and we're not going to think about it.
So what's the cost of the world?
What's a cough? That there is an obligation, period. That even they can go after free and clear property.
I do know, but it's not a full kingdom.
It is an obligation, but it's not enough of a kinyan to allow him to go after encumbered property, to document and to go after encumbered property.
I see. So even if you write it, that's okay. So in order to
but you're not allowed to write it because of that problem. We're not going to let you write it because if you write it, then it'll give you the power to go after
covered property. So it's enough of a chiyuv, but not enough to allow you to go after Shabbat.
Right, because you're missing, possibly, you're missing kala, which is the one of the issues. So you may be missing the general, the
title search.
The Habraza, right, the title search, the way they used to have it, that it got the call that it got announced.
It's probably not really the Kenyan, the problem is the call.
Possibly. I'm saying there is a problem in the Kenyan, but the problem with the Kenyan is that usually when there's a Kenyan, there's a call or an Edim, so there's other things that, and Gemir Sadas, all these other items that create a Habalu, that create the call to go out. Alright, we have a couple of minutes, we can go a little further. Alright, Amar Bchista. So the merit, bat etel ima, right? That the daughter is found with the mother. What does that mean? So over here in our Mishnah, we said that the stepdaughter can stay by her mother and tell the father, the ex-stepfather, pay me my mizonos by my mother. Not, and he says, when you live by me, I'll pay you. No, she can say, send them over to me. So you see what? You see that the daughter is living by the mother.
It's legitimate for her to say they have to bring it to me because it's legitimate for her to be with her mother.
Exactly. So where does that have other application? Where's the other application? Here's one application by the stepdaughter by the divorce, but the other application is by an estate. An estate where the brothers are left over. And we say that the daughters get mizonos out of the estate. Can't the brothers say, you have to live with us by the estate and work with us and be here with us to get your food? Or can she go live with her mother, leave the estate, and still have a claim for mizonos? So that's what Rav Chisda says. Zot merit batel etz lima. A daughter can go to her mother and still have a valid claim for her mizonos. That she does not have to be in the estate to get her mizonos. It says, Mimai, Dibidola Askina. How do you know our Mishnah is talking about even a grown daughter? Dilma Biktana Askina. Maybe we're dealing with a Tana who can't protect herself. Therefore, she's allowed to go to her mother because we don't want her staying in the estate. We don't want her staying without her mother there to protect her. We should Maisa Shahayu. Well, because of a case that happened. Tatanya, Misha Mezmeniach Ben Katan Li Imo. If someone passes away and has a young son that belongs to his mother, Yorshea Omrim Yehe Gadol Itzlenu. The inheritors of the father say, let her live with us. He should go up next with me. We let him go with his mother. We don't let him go to anybody who's able to inherit him. Why? There was a case where they let him go and they killed him. The Rosh Hashanah here look like Erev Rosh Hashanah. On the side of the says it means Erev Yom HaRishon. That it was on the first night that they had him there, he was gone, and they killed him. Why? Because he's a drain, either in the case by the Ben Katan, where he is living by the estate, he's a drain, he's one of the inheritors of the estate, or if someone inherits him, then they would kill him, because then they become the next in line. And it's like the spouse, that kills the other spouse for the insurance policy. He takes that insurance policy, he kills the spouse to get the insurance policy. So it's over here. They're going to kill the individual to get the inheritance, to get the money.
So they are.
So over here we say that we don't, by katan or katana, there's a reason to protect them. So since we want someone to protect them, we let them go to their mother. So that's maybe why our Mishnah over here says that the stepdaughter can go back to her mother, because it's a katana. Who says that our Mishnah says that it's talking about a gedola? Maybe it's a katana, it's again for protection rights, not a general statement that all daughters can go to their mothers even when they're eating out of the estate. So it says, Arishim Kay, Litne Lamukum Shehi. Then the mission should have said, she send it to the Mukum Shehi, where she is. What does that mean, where she is? Where the daughter is. Why does it say, My Lamukum Sheima? Why does it say, to the place where her mother is? The fact that the mission doesn't say send the food to where the daughter is, but send the food to where the mother is, shows you that even by Gdola, she goes to her mother. That not only is a Katana, but also a Gdola, and in the other cases where the estate has to feed the daughters can go to their mother and still eat out of the estate, because that's what the mission is trying to teach us, that even a daughter or son can go by an ima. We can finish up to the mission. I don't know if we have, we're only 5 more minutes. You want to finish up to the Mishnah? We can do it. It's up to you here. Yeah, everybody's good. Alright, we'll finish to the Mishnah. Lo Yumru Shnehem. In the case where she married twice, And these two stepfathers are obligating themselves to feed the stepdaughter for 5 years each. And now they're overlapping. Their obligations overlap. They can't say between us we'll feed her, or we'll share the obligation, or one of them says she's getting fed, or come by me. They both have to feed her. One gives her food, and one gives her money, equivalent of food. So it says, Ha'u Gavra, the ogre lay rechai l'chavre. He rented out his mill to his friend, the tchina, to grind. So he has this individual, let's call it Reuven and Shimon. So Reuven has a mill. He gives it to Shimon. He rents it out to Shimon, but Shimon's not paying money for the mill. Shimon, when he's using the mill, he's for himself. But the deal is that whenever Reuven has grain to mill, he'll bring it to Shimon, and Shimon will do it for free. So that's how he pays for the schira. He pays for the schira by saying, basically, it's a... Right.
It's the grinding service.
And he provides the service. That service for Reuven will be the equivalent of schira from Reuven, to pay the schira, to pay the rent to Reuven for having the mill. The Sofi Ata. So what happens in the end? Reuven gets rich. Zavin Rechaya. Vechamra. He bought for himself his own mill, again, and a chamor and a donkey to run the mill. So now Reuven, who had originally rented out the mill to Shimon, buys himself his own mill. So now Reuven no longer needs the services that Shimon's providing as his rent, because he has at home now. He has his own mill that's done by a donkey, and he doesn't need the services. Now, Amarle, I didn't have a techinina gabech. Till now, Reuven says to Shimon, I went and I ground by you, that's how you paid your schar. Hashtag the Agra. Now pay me money. I don't need your services anymore. Now start paying me rent in the money equivalent because I don't need your services. Samalay. So that sounds like our Mishnah, right? Sounds like our Mishnah, where he had an obligation before that came in the form of mizonos. Now where she's getting fed mizonos by another stepfather, then we say to him, pay her money equivalent, not mizonos anymore.
It's a little different because here is something that he would do himself, so he didn't have to go and get more money. It's just a problem. Time is money.
Right.
But here, let's say there's no money. You know what I'm saying? He could say, that wasn't part of my idea. I don't have a way of making that extra. I don't know. Let's say there's only two people in the city need it, you and him. I'm doing it for him. I can't double up now to make more money.
All right, so Gemara gives a similar solution to you, which is suggesting over here. So Amalei, Mitchan, Tchinalach. And the guy says back to him, Shimon says back to him, I'll grind for you. All right, if you don't have grinding, that's our agreement. We have to grind for it. So, Rabbi Lemeir Hainu Masnisim. Rabbeir thought, this is our Mishnah. Lo Yerushneim Arini Zanim No Ta'ak Echad. We'll feed her together. We'll give her food. El Echad Zana. One has to feed her. Ve'echad No Tilan Demei Zonos. And the other one has to give her money. So you see that what? When you have an obligation to pay food and you no longer need the food, she no longer needs the food. She's getting fed somewhere else. You have to give the money equivalent. So it's over here. He had provided a service beforehand that was grinding for Reuven. Now Reuven doesn't need that service anymore. He's got to pay the money equivalent. So I'm going to review him. Me, so give a solution like Yosef. It's a little bit like the rest of us. Hatam chad kresa isla. By the girl, she can't, if you give her double mizonos, it's not going to benefit her anyway. She can't eat twice. She only eat once. Right? That's who's the obligation to sell?
If it were a man, it wouldn't say.
Right. So it wasn't Shabbos. So anyway, she can't eat for two people. She only eat once. So therefore, giving her mizonos the second time is meaningless. That's why you give her the many equipment. Tyler Grace Lisa. Hacha Matzi Amarle. Here he can say, Tocha Mizavin, Tocha Motiv. He'll say, listen, you bring your stuff here, and I'll grind it. And with your own mill, get other people to bring you, and you'll make money that way. So the question really is, and I think that's what you're saying, sell the mizonos, what is, whose obligation it is to turn it into money?
He has to be Torah,
right?
To do that.
Right. Who has to be Torah to turn it into money? Do we say over here that the daughter has to sell the mizonos to get the money? Or do we say, no, it's the obligation of the giver to give the money over. So over there we said it's the obligation of the giver, the stepfather, to give the money, so it looks like he has to be Torah. So in our case that would mean that the miller, Shimon, who's renting, should have to do that. The Gemara says, no, it's a different case. Over there, there's no value in giving her two mizonos, so therefore we say give her money. But over here, he can say, listen, I'll grind for you still. You find some other people to grind for, and you'll grind, and you'll turn it into money that way. So I'm going to give you money, because you still need mill services. It's just that you're doing it on your own mill, not my mill. I say, no, bring it to me. I'll do the mill servicing for you. And then with your new, brand new mill, you service the community, and you make your money that way. So he says, Velo Amron, I will delay the late tchina l'rechai. We only say that if the soker, Shimon, can't easily find other people to mill for. Because but if he can easily find other people to mill for, then we say kofen otom is stone. We say that zenenem is lo chaser. Meaning that what does he care who he mills for? Right. If he's going to mill, it doesn't matter if he's milling for Reuven or he's milling for a third party. If it's easy to find business, then we say to him, get the business and pay him the cash. Don't make Reuven drag all the stuff over here to mill by you when he can mill in his own house. But if it's not easy to find the other people to mill for, we say then we put that obligation on Reuven to go out and find the people to mill and turn into money. And we say, look, you had an agreement to mill by Shimon. You have to continue to fulfill that obligation.